expose. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to Becca Staley, our director, Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Noreen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Tammy Warnoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman with Noreen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's 7:59, and this is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Native Voices from the Edge with Carrie and Amory. In just about 1 minute at 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogering talks about life, death, and insanity on planet Earth. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, we'll hear from two of the contributors to Writing for Animals, New Perspectives for Writers and Instructors to Educate and Inspire. And at 11 this morning on Black Book Talk, Black Book Talk asks guests and listeners what they're reading. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. Go to KBOO.fm and click on Donate. And stay with us because Native Voices from the Edge is next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The Art of the Guillotine and other class horror stories on Friday, October 5th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery in Portland. In this exhibit, Shane Bugby has created a variety of handmade flags with messages for the powers that be, sculptural works that include $10,000 of real shredded U.S. currency, detention center Liberty Shanks, and a life-size model of a guillotine. The opening features snacks, cake, and interactive performances. Again, that's The Art of the Guillotine and other class horror stories on Friday, October 5th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery, 534 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Law for the People Convention from October 31st through the 4th at the Benson Hotel in Portland. Registration is now open for this five-day conference. Panels and workshops include Facing Fascism, What's the NLG's Role in Defending Resistance to Fascism? Movement Lawyering for Racial Justice. Disaster Capitalism, Colonialism and Climate Change. What it means to do movement legal support in indigenous communities, and much more. Again, registration is now open for the Law for the People National Lawyers Guild Convention from October 31st through the 4th at the Benson Hotel, 309 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:02 a.m., and you are listening to Native Voices from the Edge.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. Whoa. People, and we have to reunite. I said better gather up our warriors, cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, 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 oh. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, 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 oh.
Today we're joined by ConFam. Carrie, would you like to do some more introducing?
Oh, sure. This is Carrie Waters.
And I'm Amory Shack.
And we're so excited to be back for a final month of Native Voices from the Edge as Joanne finishes her campaign.
Yes, it's so true. Yes. We're so glad to be here.
And I'm so excited. We have ConFam with us today from APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. And we'll chat with her a bit before we jump into some breaking news about the Portland Clean Energy Initiative and corporate opposition. So as I mentioned, we're joined by Khan Pham. Khan is the manager of immigrant organizing at the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. She also serves as the board chair of Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. Good morning, Khan.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So could you share just a bit about yourself, your role at Opano?
Sure. Yeah. my role at Opano, the official title is Manager of Immigrant Organizing, but it encompasses a broad range of issues, and environmental and climate justice are two real key issues that our members, particularly our Pacific Islander members, have lifted up as a key and pressing issue in their lives.
Perfect. And today we're going to be talking about some of the corporate opposition and you know, some of the contributions and things that have unfolded this week. But I'd love to take a few steps back to just talk about why, why you came to be involved with the Portland Clean Energy Initiative as we know it today.
Sure. Well, you know, my interest and involvement in climate justice issues has been, well, I've been interested for many years, and quite frankly, was a little bit paralyzed by the immensity of the issue. And so when I found this opportunity to get involved in something that's really positive and has a proactive vision, I just jumped at the opportunity. As Opano is a member of the Coalition of Communities of Color, and so we were approached about almost 3 years now, 3 years ago, with the NAACP Portland branch and 350 PDX to get involved in this initiative. And we just immediately were excited by this opportunity to create jobs in our community, to really invest in local economic development and a renewable economy, while at the same time taking climate action. So it just hit on our goals on so many fronts that the whole coalition was super excited to get involved.
Yes. And could you share a bit for those who don't know about the mechanism? How will these projects be funded? What are the types of projects that will be funded?
Sure. So the Portland Clean Energy Initiative would create a $30 million fund that would go towards funding renewable energy projects and energy efficiency projects, such as rooftop solar or weatherization projects for renters and low-income homeowners. And we would fund this through a 1% business license surcharge only on retail companies that make over $1 billion a year, $1 billion with a B. And that includes retail companies such as Walmart, Wells Fargo, Comcast, you know, all the big box retailers that really just received a 40% tax cut in 2017 and haven't been paying their fair share. So, Oregon has one of the lowest corporate tax rates in the country and the highest tax rates for individuals. Individuals actually make up 7 out of 10 tax dollars. So individuals are paying a way disproportionate share of our taxes. And this initiative is one small way that we can actually make corporations pay their fair share.
And I'll also add that's $30 million annually.
Yes, it would be an annual renewable contribution. So we really need a steady source of revenue if we want to reach our ambitious climate action goals as a city and as a county.
Yes, absolutely. And so why make this connection? You know, what is the connection? Where is that meaning for you as far as community benefits, this connection to big business? You know, why retailers as opposed to like manufacturers, for example?
Sure. That's a lot of questions. So first I'll say why, you know, the community needs. Our community members have really echoed consistently the need for good paying jobs. Our members are many of whom are immigrants and are lower income, and they are not reaping the benefits of the economic boom in Portland. They're still struggling to find jobs that actually can support a family. There's a lot of, you know, kind of low-paying minimum wage jobs, but we can't afford rent in the city on those jobs. And so the need for good-paying jobs has just been really emphasized, and this initiative actually creates a pathway for good-paying green jobs that can start at $21 and go up to $28 within a couple of years, And these are the kinds of good paying jobs that people can feel good about. They're helping to install solar on buildings and on homes, or helping to lower someone's utility costs by insulating and updating the insulation and other weatherization updates. So that's the connection that we see between our community members' needs and the goals of the Portland Clean Energy Initiative.
That's great. I loved how you articulated in your blog post on Apana's website a couple years back. It's still relevant, though.
You've got a reader.
Oh, yes. What's gentrification got to do with it? Anti-displacement as a climate resilience strategy. And I think more and more folks are making the connections between our housing crisis locally, our planet on fire over the summer. You know, people are recognizing that there are connections between these disparities that we're seeing locally, regionally, and globally. And it's all rooted in this definition of success in our society based around concentration of wealth and power. And so I love that Portland Clean Energy Initiative is an opportunity to shift the wealth, to shift the resources, to shift the power to our communities. So let's talk a little bit more about corporate accountability and why retail?
Great. So, you know, as I mentioned, 7 out of 10 of our tax dollars come from individuals, not from corporations. And we need to actually make sure that as we move towards a renewable economy, as we move off our fossil fuel economy, all of us need to be part of the solution. And right now, the burden of that is unfairly placed on individuals and families that are just, you know, that are trying to do our part too, but we need corporations to step up and do their fair share. So we chose retail companies partly because there's actually statewide carbon pricing initiatives that are already going on that would tackle some of the manufacturers and industrial emitters that you're talking about. But one of the aspects that has not been captured has been consumption patterns, because we know that even though, you know, if I buy my laptop computer here in a Walmart in Portland, that doesn't get captured. It wasn't manufactured in Oregon, so many of the kind of traditional carbon pricing and climate action schemes don't capture all the embedded emissions that are in that computer. But actually are, you know, the kind of global supply chains that make my laptop possible require an immense amount of greenhouse gas emissions. And so it is important that we look at consumption and we look at the embedded greenhouse gases in our products. And these global multinational retailers like Walmart and Target and Home Depot are actually part of the problem too when they outsource all of their production to other countries. And so this initiative is a way that we can capture some of the costs of those global consumption patterns while also recognizing that retailers cannot move, right? They cannot, if I shop at my local Walmart, they can't just, it's not going to help them to move over to Beaverton or to Gresham or even to Nevada. They have to, I shop at my store because I physically can go there. And so they're a little bit more immune to, they can't move as easily as a manufacturer can. And so that's one reason that retailers make an important target for our initiative. Mm.
And how about the question of whether or not these costs will be passed on to consumers?
Sure. That's an argument that we've heard consistently from the opposition, but it just hasn't, there's no credible research to back that up. And in fact, the City Club of Portland just recently carried out their own independent research and did a scan of the literature and to find if a small municipal surcharge in like ours has actually resulted in price increases. And they found no evidence to support that would happen. And because of their assessment of no impact on consumers, the City Club of Portland has endorsed our initiative. So that's why Business for a Better Portland, Main Street Alliance, and many other small businesses have also endorsed, because they recognized that a healthier Portland and more good jobs benefit everyone.
That's great.
That's true.
Yeah, it, you know, as I understand it, prices are typically set nationally, and so it would be a strain on these corporations to adjust them locally in that way.
Exactly. And I think it's really telling the way that they're, that the corporations are spinning it. These corporations aren't trying to help us, like, aren't trying to help consumers. They're threatening us.
Yeah, they care about profit. So I know that, you know, the Corporate Opposition Political Action Committee states that they oppose taxes that would increase costs to consumers, small businesses, and low-income residents in the city of Portland. Really. I hate the conflation of small business and large business. And I was doing some research recently about, you know, what qualifies as a small business and how do we know whether or not this will actually impact our small businesses. And, you know, the definition of large retailer in the measure that folks can peruse online if they so wish, defines the large corporations as those who make over $1 billion nationally and over 500,000 locally. So as folks ask, oh, will this mom and pop shop be impacted, or, you know, this franchise? And, you know, so the answer there is, well, do they make over 500,000 locally and over $1 billion nationally?
Yeah, and I think the key thing to emphasize is that is the both conditions need to be met. Some people have been confused and think either or, but it's, you know, almost no Portland businesses make over $1 billion a year nationally. This is purely for the mega corporations that that are not based here, that are not, that primarily take their profits from our community and then siphon it out towards to their headquarters and to their shareholders. Yeah. So this is a way that we can also invest in our local economy by taking some of those dollars and making sure they stay in our local economy.
Yes. Love it. So this week, folks can feel free to check out the Oregon Secretary of State website to check out any of the campaigns that are going on right now. You know, it's fascinating to see where the contributions are coming from. So the opposition has recently come out with some major contributions this last week. Can you share a bit about that, Con?
Sure. Well, the opposition has finally been forced to report their contributions because of our state election laws, and we've seen over $200,000, almost $250,000 pour in from the largest corporations in the country, including Walmart and Comcast, U.S. Bank, and JCPenney, whole slew of others that you can also look on the website to find out. But they are clearly pointing out that even though they claim that prices will just be passed on to consumers, actually they're very concerned about this initiative, and we're concerned about them meddling in our democracy and the impact that this $250,000 is going to have on, you know, spreading lies. They're going to pay for a lot of corporate spin about this initiative. We are going to see a lot of, you know, scary ads of gloom and doom and about businesses leaving Portland, and that we see every single time there's any kind of measure that attacks their interests, and how that really is a subversion of our democracy. A democracy is really about people's voices and grassroots discussions and debates to fairly consider this initiative, not about million-dollar ad buys that are, you know, that our opposition has already placed to sway voters' opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'll also mention that folks are free to call in if you have any questions or perspectives that you'd like to share with us and with our listeners. So feel free to call in. The number is 503-231-8187. Got that off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
Again, that's 503-231-8187. Join the conversation.
There we go.
So, getting back to this discussion about these corporations
It really surprises me that corporations that are this large, like Amazon, like things that we really can't get away from because they're so large, like, why would they be you know, involved in something like this initiative, or why would they be opposed to this? And it's just, I think I know, you know, the reasons why, like this whole conversation that we're having this morning, but it just, it still shocks me to see, and because I was just looking on this Oregon Secretary of State website and just kind of having a realization moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this initiative scares them because it can, it's a replicable initiative that other cities might copy. Portland can be a real model for other cities at a time when a lot of people are feeling overwhelmed by the attacks on the environment, on the rollbacks on climate policy that the Trump administration is implementing. And they feel like they can't take action. But this is this initiative shows that actually local cities can take action, that we can find ways to fund a renewable energy transition in a way that's equitable, that includes communities that have been left out. And I think that's what scares them. It's this, you know, 1% in one city is a drop in the bucket for them. What they're concerned about is that this will become a movement that other cities will be inspired by, will take on, and that they'll suddenly face cities across the country that are in power to take back their economy and take back their agency to be able to take local climate action at a time when the federal government is showing that it won't. So that's what scares them.
Yeah. I can hear that for sure.
But yeah, it is strange to have Amazon, JCPenney, Walmart, you know, Comcast so heavily involved suddenly in this, in our little local election, right? Like what kind of democracy is that?
Yeah, it's fascinating just scrolling through and seeing the contributions. You know, the most recent one this past Tuesday came from the Standard Insurance Company, you know, which banks on the success of our extractive economy and all of these corporations. You know, so they're contributing $20,000. We've got CTIA, who represents the U.S. wireless companies. And, you know, don't even get me started on my mobile service. It's, you know, it's clear if you engage with these companies that, you know, they're all about the profit at the expense of employees, consumers, you know, just going down the line.
And in particular, Oregon has one of the lowest tax burdens, and that's causing incredible hardship for our state in terms of being able to fund our state, our schools, and very basic social services. And even groups like Eco Northwest did a study recently about tax burdens and agreed that Oregonians are just unfairly bearing the burden of our social services and that corporations are not paying their fair share. You can see a 2017 State of Portland report from Portland Business Alliance as well.
That's right. Yeah, and even, you know, this past May when we were here doing this show, we were talking about the statewide transportation plan, for example, that is funded through, you know, wage taxes. We've got these regressive funding mechanisms. Even the local gas tax, you know, it's so important to identify creative ways to fund the infrastructure and services that we desperately need. But we need progressive solutions. We've got Amy joining us. Hello, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I am super excited about finding this show on my way to work. And I have been thinking about the idea of getting more involved in social issues and obviously the need to do something about our environmental crisis. And I feel like my current job is contributing to the problem, and I really want to switch up careers and find something that I can make a living at and still do something super positive and make changes that are meaningful and lasting. And I kind of caught a little bit of wind that is what this initiative possibly can help with. Is that right?
Absolutely. It is. Yeah, so thank you so much, you know, for your reflection. I mean, the tough thing about all of this is that, you know, we're all entrenched in the extractive economy, you know, and oftentimes that can result in us feeling guilt or shame. And so that's what I love about this initiative, is that it's focused on justice and changing the systems and recognizing that, you know, we can't change the world by, you know, putting a timer on during our showers or, you know, there's all these climate actions that are important, you know, if you feel compelled and convicted to act in that way. But I really appreciate your reflection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also share that excitement about this opportunity to create jobs that are really contributing to a healthy and resilient economy. I mean, it's community, right? Like, we have a lot of members who are stuck, you know, who are saying like, you know, I do service work. It's kind of dead end. I don't see a pathway forward. But I would love to actually be building solar on top of my apartment building and feeling that kind of sense of pride in helping to build a stronger community, because we need to be able to take ownership over the direction of our community. And I think a lot of people share this sense of, you know, that we're in a very serious ecological crisis, that we're seeing the impacts of every year now. We're expecting wildfires where that kind of shut down our skies and make us wear air masks, but we can also be part of the solution as well. And I think that kind of benefit is really, you can't put a price tag on the kind of satisfaction that comes from being able to contribute to a healthy community.
Exactly. And
well, I think it's a wonderful idea, and it makes a ton of sense. And I think that other cities would copy your ideas, and that's what's super exciting as well, is the idea that it can be a movement that affects the whole country, and it needs to.
Thank you so much. And I just do want to take the opportunity to encourage people who are inspired to get involved to please check out our website. It's PortlandCleanEnergyInitiative.com, and you can volunteer, you can donate, and you can at least pledge to vote yes this November.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. And we've got lots of different ways that folks can be involved. You know, one thing that I've recognized, you know, with ballot measures and campaigns and asks for folks is that, you know, we've got our extroverts out there who love, you know, just talking to lots and lots of people. And we've also got our introverted folks who might want to be engaged but not know how exactly. And so on the Portland Clean Energy Initiative Facebook page, you'll see lots of different events and ways to get engaged. For example, this Saturday there is a caramel apple and cider canvas.
I think we have a caller on the line. Camilo, are you on the line?
Camilo.
For this engaging discussion, and I would like you to go in a direction that you have begun to lay out by describing how the corporate structure, the tax structure, the extractive economy essentially concentrates wealth and power, and it does it in a way that really doesn't distribute this wealth to the community at large. So what this campaign represents is a way to not exactly combat it, but to end up through the process of the way that we are organizing to offer a counterweight. And I think that is going to come through the way that we are organized, the way that we developed the structure, and the way that the campaign has developed to include so many different parts of the community. And what I am hoping to see come out of it is an organization of different parts of the progressive community, particularly the environmental and the social activists and the labor as represented by Jobs with Justice. Could you sort of wax on that concept of how it's going to empower us?
Sure. Thank you, Camilo. You know, one of the most exciting...
I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much, Camilo. Bye.
One of the most inspiring and exciting parts of participating in this initiative for me has been the opportunity to be a part of this very unique coalition of groups that I've never had the opportunity to work together with, and that, quite frankly, I rarely see in the same room together. In fact, often we're on the opposite sides, you know, with when it comes to different issues. Sometimes labor and the environment are not on the same page, or, you know, communities of color, racial justice organizations are not on the same page. And this is one initiative where we can come together to see our shared vision, our shared values. And I have built relationships with environmental groups like Sierra Club and 350 PDX that I never imagined I would have. And I think these relationships are going to carry forward well beyond November, because you're right, this is just one battle in what is a lot much longer term fight, and we're going to need to build these strong relationships, this really powerful new progressive majority that really represents the will of the people of Portland. And we can we're showing that we can stand up against big money interests, big corporate out-of-state interests that are trying to come in and continue to determine the direction of our community. So so thank you for highlighting. It's not just about this win, but it's about this coalition and this power that we're building together.
That's great. We've got Audie on the phone. Hello, Audie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm loving your program. I'm really with you all the way. I just wanted to comment about just our general society and how they're just not educated to understand the distinctions that are so important when we're trying to negotiate and have a society that works for everyone. I was talking to my granddaughter who's just started PCC here, and she said something about defending capitalism, and I said, you know, Greta, capitalism is not a good thing. But she says, well, but it's the ability for people to, you know, compete and have, and I said, that's free enterprise. And free enterprise is good, but capitalism is when they take money from workers and they take money off the top and store it somewhere. It's not the same as free enterprise, and it's not the same as democracy. And so free enterprise and democracy are great. Capitalism is really bad. And she just looked totally puzzled. Mm-hmm. So to have this kind of education going on in the schools where we have really clear definitions of what we're talking about, because most of America is really confused about what we actually have as a system and what parts of the system work and what parts of the system don't. So that's my primary comment today.
Thank you so much, Audie. That really resonates with me. And, you know, I've been seeing some memes around of folks saying, like, capitalism has only been around for, you know, 1% of our timeline in humanity, if not less. But yet it's the only system, and we can't move away from capitalism. There's so much misinformation out there. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to the objectification of people and living beings, you know, and trying to think about how can I benefit from you? And this extends beyond, you know, these corporations. It extends into our dominant society's values and mindset of whether or not we view ourselves, you know, as interconnected and here to serve each other and, you know, lift our people and planet up collectively, or whether we're here to objectify one another.
Which is ultimately about respect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, and about profit over people.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we're seeing the effects of that unbridled capitalism today in our world, where we're facing a situation where even the titans of capitalism right now are realizing that there's limits, that a system that's based on exponential growth and continued growth cannot survive in a system that's by nature finite, right? A system that's based on infinite growth and finite resources is going to hit some limits. And so people are realizing that that our transition is inevitable, that we are going to have to transition off our current system, whether we like it or not, right? But the question for us right now is, what kind of transition do we want it to be? Do we want it to be a transition of something that's even more authoritarian, where just a very, very tiny elite control all of our very scarce and increasingly scarce resources? Or are we going to transition in a just way, in an equitable way that ensures that all of our resources are really shepherded and determined by the people and not by a small minority, and in a way that's equitable, so that the benefits of that kind of development are really shared and include people who are currently left out of the dominant extractive economy. So those are the questions that I think we're really facing, and that even Walmart is facing, right? They're realizing, oh, we can't keep extracting fossil fuels because there is a limit, that the water is, you know, clean water is actually becoming increasingly scarce, and that the climate projections that even the World Bank is acknowledging, we're looking at, even the Trump administration recently acknowledged in environmental impact assessment that we are looking at a 7-degree Fahrenheit increase by the end of the century. And their solution, though, is to just roll back auto emission standards, right? They're like, well, we can't do anything about it. Let's just have fun while we've got it. And we're saying, no, actually, we can do something about it. This is caused by humans, and that means human beings can actually be a force to reversing this and changing the direction of our economies.
Yes, agreed. Something else that this makes me think of is, you know, some of the token efforts that large corporations make for, you know, PR purposes, or you know, the greenwashing that we see. So there, you know, for example, folks may have seen that Amazon recently responded to Bernie Sanders' call to raise minimum wage to $15 per hour for all U.S. workers. But, you know, just last week, they contributed $20,000 against Portland Clean Energy Initiative. So, you know, there are ulterior motives out there sometimes in what would otherwise seem like a goodwill, good faith effort. I also think about, you know, the banks, for example, like, you know, U.S. Bank and Bank of America and Wells Fargo, who have consistently funded pipelines, gas and oil pipelines. Over a year ago, after the public outcry against the Dakota Access Pipeline, the U.S. bank CEO promised that they would cease all financial support to oil and gas pipelines. Right. But, you know, if you follow up, you see that, you know, that promise got broken faster than a treaty. And
how much did U.S. bank oil contribute?
So U.S. bank has contributed, oh, I just accidentally clicked a link.
I think it's $20,000 against the Portland Clean Energy Initiative.
Yep. On the 25th.
We have another caller. Mike, are you on the line?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Thanks.
Oh, good. I just wanted to make a comment here that one way that we can kind of not even have to deal with policy and lower our greenhouse emissions is by going with a plant-based diet, not eating any meat anymore. Animal agriculture is a leading cause for greenhouse emissions, and surpasses transportation in a huge amount. And by going plant-based, and we make a big change without having to go to our politicians and everything, because it's based on demand. And once we stop eating meat and dairy, we can make a huge impact.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of individual actions that people can take. But ultimately, if we want to address the root causes, the systemic causes of this ecological and social crisis we face, we do need to make systemic change. And that our government should be working for us. I know that right now there's this, sometimes corporations want us to feel like, oh, politics is dirty. Don't get involved. Don't dirty your hands with politics. And that allows them to just have free rein on our local
civic duty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think people have been really excited. I've been excited to actually be able to get engaged. I've never been involved in as deeply in this way in a ballot measure campaign. But it's given me the opportunity to knock on the doors of my neighbors, to talk to them about their vision for Portland and our vision for Portland. And I would really encourage our listeners right now to really deeply consider, what kind of city do you want Portland to be? We're seeing some serious changes in Portland right now, and we're really at a crossroads. And I encourage you to, if you share our vision, to go online on our website and sign up to volunteer. There's so many different ways that you can contribute, whether it's knocking on the doors of your neighbors or hosting a house party for your friends and family to tell them about this exciting initiative, because we are going to face millions of dollars in ad buys and corporate lies and spin that's really going to scare people about what it means to vote yes. And so we need the power of the people to tell people, yes, you can get involved, you can work towards a positive and resilient Portland. And so please get on our website, portlandcleanenergyinitiative.com, and find out how you can support our campaign.
And on that note, if you need an extra incentive, October is National Bullying Prevention Month. I mean, it ties in. If you're looking for a way to just beat the bully,
the corporate bullies,
sign up.
Yes, agreed. And on that note of, you know, our food choices, a certain percentage of the $30 million per year is going to go towards sustainable urban agriculture. And this helps to build a resilient community with, you know, healthy foods that are accessible to those that otherwise don't have access, through sustainable farm, you know, sustainable urban agriculture, so that we can take back our control of what we put into our bodies. Because ultimately, as we think about energy, you know, that ties into the food and the energy that we take into our bodies. So we need clean, healthy energy.
Yeah, that's a good reminder for me to talk about some of the projects that this initiative would fund. Primarily, the bulk of the funding does go toward, about 50% of the funding does go towards renewable energy and energy efficiency projects. But there's also about a percentage, about 20 to 25%, that goes towards job training for communities, for, you know, underemployed workers who want to get trained in these jobs, so we can create a pipeline for people to, once, as we're creating these projects, we also need to be training up our folks, our workers, to be able to take those jobs.
True.
And then about 10% goes towards local food production and tree canopy. So these are all some of the projects that this initiative would support.
Great. We have another caller. Warren, are you on the line?
Hi. I don't know if you mentioned it or not. So I do my best to keep on listening, but I'm trying to make deliveries. Anyway, so if it hasn't been mentioned, there's what people can do is take their money out of U.S. Bank, which I just did, you know, and let them know why, right?
Yes.
They've gone back on their promise, which is, you know, what they need to be told. And if enough people do it, then I think it should be able to have impact, and then put it into a credit union, a local community credit union, which invests in the community. So
that's a
you know, I've known that this is something I could do for a long time, and finally I got it done, and it was really easy to do. So
that's a great point. Thank you,
yeah,
Warren.
I wanted to put that out there. Yeah,
that's a great point about moving our money.
Thank you, Warren.
To divesting our money from systems, extractive and exploitative systems that we don't want to be a part of. This is all about moving our money towards a regenerative economy that we want to build. And I do want to say that we can also tell corporations directly about the impacts of their corporate contributions on our democracy. So this Tuesday, our campaign is organizing a small rally outside of Walmart. And we would love some more support of people out there to tell Walmart, hey, when you're making these contributions and getting involved in our local democracy, we want you to stay out of it, and we want you to do the right thing. So if you're interested, you can go on our website to find out more. And also on Tuesday at 4 p.m., we're going to be outside of Walmart to let them know.
Love that.
On my birthday. Hey.
Are you going to be there, Carrie?
I sure will.
Love
it. You know it.
It's a good way to celebrate.
That's right. So we've got just a couple minutes. We're going to wrap up, and then we're going to shift to a statement from a healer in our community to end on an uplifting note. So, Con, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Yeah, I would just say that these are difficult times we live in right now. I think it's easy to feel overwhelmed by the state of the world. And I just encourage people to look at this Portland Clean Energy Initiative as one of those positive, proactive campaigns that you can get involved in that shows that Portland can be a local leader, that we can, that there is a different way, and that we can both create good paying jobs and create a healthy environment and protect our climate for the future.
And if people want to share or learn more about it, where should they go to find the information out?
They can go on our website, portlandcleanenergyinitiative.com, and get involved. And as soon as you sign up, you can also include your phone number to get text messages so that we can remind you about different opportunities as well. So I encourage you to please go on our website and get signed up so we can keep in touch. There's only 34 days left, so we really need every, we're in crunch time right now. We're really facing the corporate opposition, the corporate dollars that are pouring in, and we need people power to fight back.
And can you just say about the event one more time, just in case someone...
Sure.
Yeah, which Walmart?
It is on 82nd Avenue off Holgate and 82nd, and we'll be meeting in front of the U.S. Bank. And it's going to be at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, October 9th. This is this coming week. And we would love more people out there to raise awareness about the ways that Walmart is meddling with our local democracy. And we need to show them they need to step back and let the people lead.
Thank you so much for joining us, Con.
Thank you both.
So now we're going to shift into a statement that was recorded in advance by Candace Jimenez, a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, who recently started her med school journey. She's been working with the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board and will be honored this evening at the Oregon Native American Chamber gathering as a scholarship recipient. So without further ado, Candace Jimenez.
Ituktiwigwa kanawishan, naika shawashkliu timix, naika bashnebt ichkliu Candace Jimenez, quen quenin kiach ichguamnich dika daba dayawigwa, quen quenin kiach inchdimum dika daba. Good morning, everyone. My Wasco name is Timix, and my English name is Candace Jimenez. I am happy to be here today, and I'm happy that you are all here listening. So, good morning. Again, my name is Candace Jimenez. I am a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, where I was raised on our tribal reservation within a supportive and close-knit community in rural Central Oregon. My ancestors originate from the Columbia Plateau region, which includes modern-day Portland, the Warm Springs, Wasco, Paiute, and Yakima, as well as Wintoon from Northern California. Currently, I'm pursuing my dream of becoming a healer, a physician for our community within the YEAST postbaccalaureate cohort at Oregon Health and Science University, based at the Northwest Native American Center of Excellence. The center aims to comprehensively and sustainably address the healthcare needs of all people by increasing Native American voice in the U.S. health profession's workforce. This is done in a myriad of ways that includes recruiting, training, and retaining future health leaders, as well as educating students and faculty by bridging a connection to tribal and rural communities. This also provides for the opportunity to expand tribal partnerships. I've spent the last 5 years as a research coordinator for the Northwest Tribal Epidemiology Center at the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board. Our staff support Northwest tribes in their efforts to improve health. My efforts have focused specifically on child passenger safety, as well as preteen oral health. We support tribal youth into healthcare careers through mentorship opportunities and tribal youth outreach. The mission of the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board is to eliminate health disparities and improve the quality of life of American Indians and Alaska Natives by supporting Northwest tribes in their delivery of culturally appropriate, high-quality healthcare. And before I go on, I wanted to share a little bit of my own journey into medicine and to think a little bit about health equity. And in doing so, I often go back to my early childhood. So as I matured through elementary school, I always remember visiting our local IHS clinic, Indian Health Service Clinic, where I accompanied my grandmother to visits for her chronic rheumatoid arthritis. It was a disease she sustained from an early age, from as long as I can remember. It was during this time that I observed the health status and quality of health care available for tribal members. I would say although care was present in comparison to local towns, community members deemed it as lesser quality. And as a child, I didn't understand or recognize this inequity across the health system. But I think today it's evident that economics, geography, and maybe a lessened focus on cultural agility in serving tribal communities could contribute to these inequities. As I grew older, I shared with educators this observation and concluded that my passion and energy for medicine would include understanding and bridging possible gaps for my community, as well as others, whether I might find myself on another tribal reservation or in serving underserved communities. I think this is important because care should be inclusive and it respects cultural differences in health, as well as a patient's view of a healthcare provider. What I've carried from each of these experiences is that modern scientific medicine by itself can't reestablish missing harmony in health without understanding all places in a person's life, including their relationships, their environment, and knowing that everything in life is truly connected. As future healers in today's society, or as a current healthcare provider, public health leader, or the space that any of us shares from, I think we must understand the bond between human, spirit, and nature as they all contribute to our healing and illness alike. My hope is that I and other current and future leaders in healthcare in all spaces honor the ancestral strength and cultural framework steeped in tribal community values. Within our communities, we are taught as children to respect our elders, learn from their wisdom, and be proud as Native people. Our system of cultural beliefs respects all humanity, values inclusivity, and recognizes the value of every life in every single community. A space where I see natural and traditional healing practices in partnership with modern medicine as a truly distinctive platform from which we can appreciate each other's customs. As I've matured, I recognize the desire for communities across our region and beyond seeking to make direct and meaningful human connections, which naturally includes a deep-rooted need to serve others, to carry the needs of our communities. And I think it's the want and need for a society that connects rather than isolates. In concluding today, I'd like to share a quick message that a family member shared when I completed my undergraduate program, which is this: keep learning, keep trying, and keep accomplishing. May this add to your toolbox today and bring you healing light. Thank you for your time and joining us.
Again, that was Candace Jimenez, Warm Springs tribal member, pursuing her medical studies. So powerful and so appropriate as we had this conversation about the Portland Clean Energy Initiative and as we think about the public health implications for this important work. You know, there are so many pathways to health, and I really appreciate this grounding in culture. Because the organizations that will be funded through Portland Clean Energy Initiative are community-based organizations. I think of, you know, Mudbone Grown, for example, a community-based farm that is operated by Black community members who want to reconnect to land and heal from historical traumas associated with agriculture. I also think of the Native Gathering Gardens that help to restore our connection to the plant world in a way that heals and builds our capacity for managing our natural resources and our cultural resources in a respectful way. So again, thanks to Candace for sharing that powerful statement, and to Confam for joining us today. Amory, do you have any other words?
Yeah, I just wanted to, I mean, I just love and I agree with what you said, Candace, sharing that and just wrapping it together is, you know, part of that intergenerational thinking and equity that is part of this initiative that I'm so glad to have this conversation about. Another reason why we wanted to share this is because Candace is being honored tonight at the Oregon Native American Chamber's 14th annual fall gathering. And if you don't know about ONAC, for short, it's Oregon Native American Chamber, and they are guided by the belief that Native businesses are a foundation for emerging Native economies that would provide employment and education opportunities to allow our Native communities in Portland and beyond the opportunity to break the generational cycles of poverty. And Candace, as well as others, you know, have been part of a scholarship program. And tonight, among other activities that will happen at the gathering, will be an opportunity to honor her and her work and her experience. So just a little plug, so learn about ONAC powerful. As well.
And I'll also just mention, I reminded Amory of this before we started, but it was at last year's ONAC gathering that we made this connection.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Coming together and helping to bring this show to you all as
it's
Joanne
true.
Campaigns.
We were at the registration table and we were like, why don't we get on KBOO?
Yeah, I think we were talking about our life goals and dreams, yes. And you mentioned wanting to do a podcast, and Joanne and I had recently agreed that I would help to host this show, and so we came together as co-hosts, and the rest is history.
It was so natural.
Yes. So perfect. So perfect. So again, thanks to our listeners for calling in and joining the conversation. Please do check out PortlandCleanEnergyInitiative.com, mm-hmm. as well as the Facebook page. Join us for our anti-corporate action at Walmart/my birthday party. No, it's, you know. anyway. Tuesday, October 9th. It's a good day. And also
at 4 p.m.
at 4 p.m. in front of the Walmart on
82nd Avenue and
Holgate. Also, I'll just mention we've got Indigenous Peoples Day coming up.
That's right.
On Monday. Fell on my birthday last year, but, you know, I'm going to continue the party. But I know that there are proclamations out there, like there's one at Multnomah County in their boardroom this morning in about an hour for folks who are in the vicinity. And, you know, I just want to emphasize that, you know, Indigenous rights and tribal sovereignty is deeply connected to climate justice. And so knowing those who have lived on this land since time immemorial and being responsible caretakers is a responsibility that I believe that we should all come together and rally around. As a Tlingit tribal member, I recognize myself as a visitor to this land, and I look to the Chinook bands and other tribes that have called this land home, whether seasonally or permanently, since time immemorial. So just a reminder that we've got Indigenous Peoples Day happening. And there was recently the first tribal summit.
Yes, the city of Portland hosted its first ever tribal nation summit last Friday.
Love
it's
it.
True.
So there's more and more recognition about this need to be good caretakers of our land so that we can help to protect our resources within the city, within our region, across our state, across our bioregion of Salmon Nation, and of course, you know, our planet as a whole. Mm-hmm. So we're really grateful for this opportunity to bring these concepts all together and to approach this through a holistic lens and framework, recognizing that the balance of mind, body, spirit, and context applies at all scales, individually, within our families, within our society, and across our globe.
That is right.
So thank you again, Con, for joining us.
Thank you, Native Voices from the Edge.
And thanks to Candace out there.
Yes.
I know she's in class. She wanted to join us in person, but I wanted to support her in her class, in her studies. So So thanks for sending that pre-recorded message in. And we'll be back next week, as well as every Thursday throughout the rest of this month. We've got some great folks to talk about other anti-displacement efforts throughout our region.
We'll probably talk about some Indian Chabal Fur Act litigation updates.
Yes.
Other topics to percolate on.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you, Amory. Thank you, Con. Thank you, John. And that's it. We've got some news coming up.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. We are all one people, and we have to reunite. I say, better gather up our warriors, cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Hey, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's 9 o'clock. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listeners' support and support from Portland Saturday Market, 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, freshly prepared international foods, and local music in downtown Portland, featuring live music and kids' corner events. Portland Saturday Market, every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park, now through Christmas Eve. Event schedule, vendor information, and more online at portlandsaturdaymarket.com. This is KBOO Portland. Press Watch is next. Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Pear talks about life, death, and insanity on planet Earth. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, we hear from two of the contributors to Writing for Animals, New Perspectives for Writers and Instructors to Educate and Inspire. At 11, Black Book Talk asks guests and listeners what you're reading. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to donate or to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 9:01. Press Watch is next.